You are Locked On Fantasy, your daily fantasy football podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Vinny Iyer. Welcome into a new week of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. We'll have to put week 7 to bed here, the Thursday and Sunday games, at least. We'll come back and look at Monday's game between the Falcons and Giants there and our takeaways there before we get into the waiver wire, weekly waiver wire on Tuesday. On Monday, we usually have Tom Kesnick here of High Stakes Fantasy for some takeaways, but I'll be flying solo on today's show here to break down everything we saw there, going back to the Broncos and Cardinals to the Sunday night game, Chiefs and Bengals here. And just a lot of interesting developments in fantasy, a few unexpected injuries there very late since we last talked, some things that have changed here as we're going forward with our thinking, and a good time to look and reevaluate everything at mid-season here. So that's what I'm going to do here on today's show. We'll get it flipped to week 8 here as we look at the waiver wire and the matchups for both year-long and DFS on Wednesday and Thursday. So if you're new to the show, that's how our lineup stacks every week. We'll end it with a double dose of Pro Football Focus at Jeff Ratcliffe and Tyler Lochner, two very good experts, as we've upgraded Experts Edition here. So Tom will be back with us next week to tell us what's going on with the NFC and the high-stakes world of fantasy football. So we'll make sure that you've got all the takeaways that you need to know here that are going to help your team improve, not just in week 8, but in beyond as well, and knowing some of the trends that are happening in these games. So let's dive right into it. We have a lot to get to. We did have four teams on bye. We also had an early London Sunday game. We go back to the Broncos-Cardinals. This one is simple. The Broncos, as expected, ran all over this Cardinals team. They got a couple pick sixes. Phillip Lindsay had the bigger days. He always seems to have over Royce Freeman, 90 rushing yards and a TD. Royce Freeman also found the end zone before the end of the first half, 37 and a TD there. So you'll take that as an RB2 flex the way you're playing Freeman at this point. Lindsay, in some weeks, is an RB2. Some weeks, like this one, he definitely produced like an RB1. So you'll take that. Lindsay's just a great asset to have in your team, continues to be, and he's not going anywhere anytime soon. It's good for the game flow to be in the Broncos. Instead, it was in 45-10. Emmanuel Sanders looked good here. We'll have to wait and see about the ankle injury that caused him to leave this game late. Six catches, 102 yards, and a TD on 7 targets. Also threw a touchdown pass to Cortland Sutton there. Sutton only made that one catch, but made it count for 28 yards. And we're hearing rumors that Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, who had 5 for 42 on 6 targets, could be on the trading block. This team looks like it might be switching to full rebuild mode despite this win to get to 3-4 here. So we'll have to keep an eye on that if they're going to make some changes here going forward. That obviously is going to affect all the fantasy values that were involved. We know something's going to affect the fantasy value of the Cardinals. Larry Fitzgerald finally found the end zone, 4 catches, 40 yards and TD, 8 targets, though. A lot of misses there by Josh Rosen. Even when not targeting him, you didn't see them. 6 sacks, 2 pick sixes, 3 interceptions. It was a terrible game for Rosen. Rookie nightmare, to say the least. Well, David Johnson, they really should have taken advantage of this matchup. He only settles for 70 yards on 17 touches. So pretty brutal. It prompted the change here of offensive coordinator, firing Mike McCoy and putting in Byron Leftwich. So we should hope at least the baseline should be McCoy has been so bad with David Johnson, and the Cardinals realize this. Steve Wilks making a move there to Leftwich, maybe say, no, this offense needs to be centered around Johnson more going forward if we're going to have a chance and be somewhat legitimately competitive going forward. So that's what we're going to watch here with the Cardinals. Fitzgerald, a lot of things there that he could do. Christian Kirk still viable here in PPR with the 3 catches, 57 yards, and 6 targets. So Kirk, Fitzgerald, Johnson, those are only 3 guys we're looking at. Ricky Seals-Jones, we're going to forget about him. Maybe they'll get him a little bit more involved, but clearly Larry Fitzgerald is more like the security blanket tight end there for Josh Rosen. Our next game was the early game. There, Chargers and Titans playing across the pond. 2019, the Chargers win. Now, Melvin Gordon, that was unfortunate. You heard the news overnight on Saturday, so hopefully you got him out of your lineup. And unfortunately, Austin Eckler didn't prove to be a great replacement here with more touches. He had only 17 for 68 in the game. They kind of just opened up the passing game. They didn't really need to do much because Phillip Rivers was hitting him the long ball first to Tyrell Williams on a 75-yarder, 4 for 118 and TD. So he stays hot, catches all his targets. Mike Williams targeted only 3 times, but he caught a 55-yard TD. So that also played a part in Eckler not having to do much. They were playing with the lead. They kind of mixed in other backs there. Didn't really get much. Justin Jackson and Mike Williams actually ran in this one. So not much at all on the ground for the Chargers without Melvin Gordon here in this game. The Titans' run defense is pretty good, so that was a product of it as well. But Eckler clearly not built to be that guy you're going to pound there. So in a pinch, they just kind of opened it up in the passing game and couldn't really do too much with the running game there. So that was a development without Gordon. So Rivers, again, solid. Every game this season, multiple TDs. He gets 306 here. So big plays. Everything's working with Phillip Rivers. What a consistent starter in fantasy here in 2018. Winning a lot of people their leagues with that consistency. Now on the Titans side of things, good to see their running game wake up. Deion Lewis looked really good, 13 carries for 91 yards, added 6 catches for 64. This is what we were looking for Deion Lewis here early in the season. We haven't seen this really since week one there against the Dolphins. Product of the matchup a little bit, but Lewis ran well. He was exciting. Derrick Henry wasn't that good, but involved a little bit in the pass game, 2 for 32, and had the touchdown there. So that helped both of them have viable days here. So all of a sudden, Titans going to buy, have some assets that were interesting again. And at wide receiver, Corey Davis, they're just tired of Corey Davis. He only caught 3 balls on 7 targets for 10 yards. Tajay Sharp has now taken over here as the receiver that they trust most. Taywan Taylor and Davis have been bad. So you had Sharp 7 for 101 on 9 targets. So we have to kind of pay attention to him, that he's the only guy here with all these other dudes that is producing here for the Titans. So not super interested in Tajay Sharp, but again, if we're going to find any source of a receiving production in Tennessee, that's where we're going to go. Marcus Mariota, still not loving that, obviously, there, even with the TD, 237 yards there. Luke Stocker caught the TD, so really not much to see there at all with this Titans offense. But at least the running game has hope going forward, and that should be their good baseline coming out of the bye. Our next game, as we flip to 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, 37-5. The Bills got a random safety in this game, but they were dominated otherwise defensively. Andrew Luck only on 56 yards passing, but 4 TDs. They just did anything they wanted in this game. Had Marlon Mack run really well. They rushed for 220 yards. Mack looked fantastic. 19 carries, 126 yards in TD. No foot, no hamstring issues. He also added 2 catches for 33. So this clearly was his backfield. They did get Nyheim Hines and Jordan Wilkins involved in some key situations. Everybody could run here, but that was after the game was out of hand. And T.Y. Hilton didn't do much, but caught 2 TDs, 4 catches, 25 yards. All of his targets, 2 scores there. So we thought the passing game could be shut down, and it was. They just were in scoring position a lot for Luck, and that helped. And Mack had a great day scoring those 2 touchdowns as well. So Mack, a great, great spot going forward. He looks legitimately like he's a guy that they're going to trust week in and week out in this backfield, and they've been waiting for it. And good news is they're playing the Raiders this week, so fantastic a chance for Mack to stay hot if you were able to pick him up there. And you're in a good position with a feature back that fell out of the sky, basically. Now, you look at on the other side, Derek Anderson, 3 interceptions. It was ugly. Kelvin Benjamin, as we thought could happen, the reunite with a former Panthers quarterback, 4 for 71 and 5 targets. Still not great, but at least some signs of life from Benjamin and kind of viable as a wide receiver 3 all of a sudden now with Anderson in there in the mix. At running back, LeSean McCoy, huge disappointment. Went down after only 2 carries for 1 yard here. Chris Ivory picked it up, 6 for 8, 81, and 4 for 53, and Marcus Murphy basically when things are out of hand. But Ivory is the guy that you got to target. He's run well. McCoy's been down early in the season as well. So McCoy down. Murphy has a little bit of upside, but Ivory is the baseline guy that you're looking at. He got 19 touches in this game for 106 yards. So he's clearly the no-brainer guy. So a couple backs in this game that you can definitely pick up and plug and play here is RB2s with some upside based on the way these offenses are constructed. So not bad at all there from a game where we didn't think there was going to be as much explosion, but we'll take it in particular cases. Our next game is the Browns and Buccaneers. The Bucs, yet another overtime game for Cleveland, 26-23, weird game ending. James Winston wasn't very good. He had two turnovers here, kind of sloppy with the ball, but did have a rushing TD and 55 rushing yards. So if you look at that, that's about getting his TDs there from the ground in terms of the equivalent of the scoring there. So you'll take it in the end. It wasn't the prettiest. No passing TDs, which is very disappointing if you had DeSean Jackson or Cameron Braid or O.J. Howard. But Mike Evans came through here 7 for 107 on 11 targets. It was good to see because it started slow. We don't know how much they were going to involve him, but I'm going to see Winston getting his go-to guy involved like that. Howard was pretty solid too, 5 for 67 on 9 targets. But DeSean Jackson, we clearly see that Ryan Fitzpatrick had the better chemistry there. Adam Humphries, the involvement bear, 4 for 37, is cut into both Godwin and Jackson's use, as well as Brait being more involved. So keep in mind, right now, the two receivers I trust most on this team are Evans and Howard, just because they're the beasts, they're the first-round picks, the guys that are going to come through every week for Winston. In the backfield, Ronald Jones scored, but still only 7 touches for 28 yards. Peyton Barber didn't look good with his 11 carries for 30, so that backfield still in flux. The Browns are a pretty good defense. Keep that in mind. So I don't know if that rotation is going to change again after Barber had a good game against Atlanta that last week. So something to note there with the Buccaneers. Now, on the Browns side of things, Baker Mayfield, we suggested to play him this one. Well, it wasn't the easiest thing, but he got 215 yards and 2 TDs and pretty much added a third TD there with 4 for 43 on the ground. So at least he didn't turn the ball over. He stuck in there, did some things, was sacked 5 times. But overall, a pretty good game for Mayfield. He just needs some receiving help. He did get some. Jarvis Landry, 10 for 97 in a TD, 15 targets. MJ Stewart, anytime you see him in the slot, money in the back bank there. So Tyler Boyd is going to have this type of game next week. So keep that in mind. MJ Stewart is pretty much guaranteed slot production on the other side there. 15 targets for Landry, so left a little on the table, but still a very good game when he wasn't doing much. David Njoku, it's clearly the go-to guy in a lot of key situations through the red zone for Mayfield. 4 for 52 in a TD. He's starting to be an every week solid play here for either treating him like Moss, that throw it up in the end zone and catch it over some smaller guys, and that's good to see. Mayfield and security blanket, rookie quarterbacks, tight end, it all lines up pretty well. We expected a little bit more out of Damian Ratley. It didn't happen here. 3 for 23. Caught all those targets. They got to get him more involved here. I mean, they don't need to force Antonio Callaway and Brashad Perryman in this mix. So they got to see that Ratley is a very efficient receiver and needs a lot more work here in this offense. With Rashad Higgins down, Callaway struggling. And the backfield, Nick Chubb, we've heard about that trade. Carlos Hyde went to the Jaguars. Perfect, because Nick Chubb now has his backfield to himself. Duke Johnson, there are rumors, would he get some touches here? But only 5 for 19. He had a -4 rush here. So Chubb, they unleashed as a workhorse immediately. 18 carries, 80 yards, had that TD, stayed in the game even when they were trailing. So good spot here for Chubb. They really like him, and he really showed his talent in this game. So you pretty much have a solid RB2 with upside now going forward. So Marlon Mack, Nick Chubb, guys, don't fall out of the sky like this to be so productive in midseason, but there you have it with this particular team. One more game we'll talk about before we take a break and look then at the second half of the games later. We're looking at Lions and Dolphins. 32-21 was the final. Dolphins, I didn't really like Matthew Stafford because I didn't think the volume was there. Still managed 2 touchdowns, 217 yards. He didn't have to do much. I really liked Kerryon Johnson, and he came through here with 19 carries for 158 yards. Had two for 21. You didn't even mind that LeGarrette Blount was the one who got the pay dirt there, 10 for 50 and a touchdown for Blount. Golden Tate even had a run here of 30 yards. But overall, disappointing game for the wideouts of the Lions when they combined for nine catches there in less than 100 yards. So not a great spot, but when they're running the ball that effectively, that's usually the trickle-down effect. Michael Roberts randomly had the touchdowns from Matthew Stafford, 3 for 48 on three targets, caught all of his targets. So tight end they've liked a little bit, some guy we can watch, but I think it was a product of this matchup where they're running, and we're in a run mode near the goal line, and they could throw those play-action passes there to Roberts. So not always the typical, but the game flow, if it's in the Lions' favor, with Matt Patricia, we've learned that they're going to run, and it's going to hurt the production of Stafford and his receivers. So something to keep in mind. It's not always going to happen that way. The Dolphins kind of rolled over for them, but that was the way it worked here. Now, Brock Osweiler, we ridiculed, but he came through with another game here, 239 yards and two TDs. Pretty solid there. So he just looks a lot better in this offense than Ryan Tannehill. We'll have to see. But keep in mind, we looked at Brock Osweiler there with Albert Wilson. Wilson got hurt, unfortunately, with a hip injury. That could keep him out long-term. Kenny Stills had the short touchdown, but it was his only catch. He got hurt here with a growing injury. So you're looking at maybe Wilson and Stills missing some time. And you got to look at Danny Amendola here. 6 for 84 on seven targets and TD. Second straight week where Osweiler's really been comfortable throwing to Amendola here. So that is a connection to watch, especially in PPR leagues. We heard all the stuff in the preseason about Tannehill and Amendola, but Osweiler and Amendola are a lot more together. Kenyon Drake owners could feel a little bit better in this one there with 10 touches there. Exploded for a 54-yard touchdown there to help him produce 87 yards from scrimmage. So Kenyon Drake, Frank Gore again, he's too old. You can't trust him. I know a lot of people flocked to Frank Gore after the 100-yard game against the Bears, but not anything there. 11 for 33. He's just an older guy. Drake is the better talent. Game changer here. He proved, hey, if you're not going to give me the touches, I'm going to go do something with limited touches, and that's what you saw in this game. So hopefully Adam Gase, there'll be a wake-up call that you can't run an old Gore in back-to-back weeks after a long game, and then Drake is the guy that you have to look at more and more in this offense. So with Wilson and Stills gone, I think that really helps Drake as well. He's a big playmaker. Wilson, they do a lot of gadget plays to him. So I really like Drake going forward because a lot of things aligned well for him in this game with what happened in it and what happened coming out of it as well. Now, we talk a lot about these games and over-unders and matchups, and we try to figure out what Vegas is thinking of these games to get a better idea how we want to look at fantasy football. Well, let me tell you this. People have always asked me, who do I like to win in a particular week as well? They're Lions or Dolphins, looking at Bucks or Browns. Well, you got to bet in the right place as well. You can't just bet on the right team. So you got to go to MyBookie. MyBookie is the ultimate betting site there. Their live in-game betting and mobile site makes it so easy to wager, whether you're stationary or on the go, and they have some of the best player perks in the business, and you can read their reviews online. They're all very, very good. And best of all, for you, as a listener of Locked On Fantasy Football, there's a special offer to get into the game at MyBookie, and it's even sweeter with if you can wait to deposit there on the site, because if you use the promo code LOCKEDON25, wait until the rush is over with all the new bettors after 7 p.m. Eastern time. You can get $25 there with a $100 deposit. So LOCKEDON25 is that promo code that you want to enter either at MyBookie online or using the app there. So take advantage of that and save some money. And remember, you'll also get the deposit bonus initially up to $1,000 as well. So that's a way to get a little bit extra money, deposit after the rush, and take advantage, because when you play there, you're going to have a lot of fun. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Use that promo code LOCKEDON25. Get into the game now and start putting down your bets and winning big at MyBookie. When we get back, we'll look at all the rest of the games here on the Week 7 NFL schedule, Thursday and Sunday. Now, the next game we'll talk about here as we get into some of the marquee actions of the week. The Panthers were down 17-0. They scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, beat the Eagles 21-17. It was not looking good for Cam Newton early, but Cam Newton started feeling his groove, did his little improvise, ended up with 7 carries for 49 yards, 269 yards, and 2 TDs. So, solid game here for Cam Newton. Devin Funchess, 6 for 62 and a TD. The other TD went to Greg Olsen. That's all he did. 2 catches, 5 yards. But you'll take it from Olsen in this year of the struggle of tight end. So Funchess and Olsen come through. You also had a random rushing touchdown by Curtis Samuel, who they're using more as a gadget player here. That didn't really help Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey still was okay and very fine in PPR. 6 catches for 51, catching all of his targets, and only 7 carries for 29 yards. Bizarre line there when he's been the workhorse, only 13 touches here. So McCaffrey hasn't been as great as he was early in the season in standard leagues. That's certainly disappointing, only 80 yards from scrimmage. But in a game like this, where the game flow was in his favor, to catch a lot more passes, being more impactful early. But Cam Newton's running. Jarius Wright had a carry for 34 yards there. That's going to cut into McCaffrey from time to time. Not CJ Anderson, either, didn't have a touch in this game. But they're starting to spread it around a little bit more in Carolina. Funchess is really the guy you can try. I think we have to be off the DJ Moore, Torrey Smith, Jarius Wright. No. Greg Olsen, you're still looking at as a key target in the red zone there for Cam. So Funchess and Olsen are the guys you're looking at, and not too much else in the passing game beyond McCaffrey, who's every week still, you just want to see a little bit more touchdown pop from the Panthers feature running back. On the other side of things, Carson Wentz was pretty solid here. 310 yards, 2 TDs, no interceptions as well. So two guys that really came through. Wentz didn't do much running in this game. Now, he's pretty much just throwing to Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey with a little bit of Dallas Goedert. Zach Ertz, 9 for 138 on 11 targets. Jeffrey, 7 for 88 and a touchdown on 10. 4 for 43 and a touchdown on 5 for Dallas Goedert. So it's really a three-person attack at this point. The running game really didn't do much. Wendell Smallwood looked okay. Corey Clement kind of disappeared when we thought he was going to have a better spot here to do well. And Nelson Agholor, 6 for 20 on 7. So it's kind of been the Ertz-Jeffrey show with occasional Goddard. And that's about it from the Eagles passing game and offense in general. So that's great if you have Ertz and Jeffrey. If it's not so good, if you've got Agholor, Clement, or trying to get Smallwood get going. It's not the greatest offense in terms of diversity at the moment. And really part of it is they can't get the ball downfield the way they'd like. 4 sacks here for Wentz. So that's part of it. But Eagles go into the Jaguars matchup. The Jaguars defense is struggling a little bit, but extremely hard right now to trust this offense behind Ertz, Jeffrey, and Wentz. And that's why in reality they're losing. In fantasy, you'll take it if you have his primary wide receiver or tight end. We go to our next game, and it's a spot where the Bears lose to the Patriots 38-31. Mitchell Trubisky had 2 interceptions this game, but then you got to love how they're running him and you're getting random points that way. But it was not random. He's a fast guy, made some moves. That was an amazing touchdown run he had. But 6 for 81 and a TD on the ground to go for 333 and 2 with the 2 picks there through the air. So Trubisky feeling it in this offense. 3rd straight big game for him. He's a legitimate QB2 and a starter in the right matchups going forward, especially if you're in a platoon situation quarterback. I don't think he's just a streamer. He's a guy that he should be owned in a lot of leagues and deployed in good matchups during the bye week. So Trubisky looking good. Jordan Howard still not getting a lot of touches, but found the end zone here. 13 touches for 48 yards for Howard. Tarik Cohen, game flow also favored him as we expected. 6 carries for 14, but 8 catches on 12 targets for 69 yards and a TD. And Trey Burton continues to be the man here. Allen Robinson was slowed. He was covered by Stephon Gilmore, Taylor Gabriel. They had a plan to keep him from beating him. So a lot of Burton, a lot of Cohen there. Burton, 9 for 126 and a TD on 11 targets. So things really looked good for Burton and Cohen here. And if Robinson's still slowed or has a tougher matchup and you have Gabriel being the focus, it's going to really funnel into that back and tight end. That's what we saw in this offense. On the Patriots side of things, the key developments here were Rob Gronkowski added a back injury to the ankle, and he had to miss this game. Pretty much that killed the tight end as being an option here. You look at the box score, not even tight end there. Jacob Hollister also missed his game. Dwayne Allen's just a guy now at this point. So where overall you look at it was Josh Gordon, 4 for 100 in this one, had a 55-yard catch, almost scored. Pretty nice to have the score, but he's legitimately now the number one option on this team without Gronkowski. They say Gronk's not going to be hurting as much, but we'll have to wait and see on that one because Gronk, we know he's got multiple ailments. He's slowing down a little bit. They're not going to rush it. They need him for the playoffs here, and they're going to be there for sure as a top seed or close to it in the AFC. So I don't expect they're going to rush Gronk back. So 4 for 100 for Gordon. Chris Hogan, 6 for 63. He benefited a little bit. Now, Julian Edelman, we like him in a PPR, and it's nice he had a TD, 5 for 36 on 8 targets. But we want a little bit more from Edelman. But in this type of game, James White can cut into Edelman's. Hogan can cut into Edelman. James White, by the way, 8 catches, 57 yards, 2 TDs on 10 targets, and 11 carries for 40 yards. That's because we saw Sonny Michel exit this game after only 5 touches for 35 yards with a knee injury. They're kind of playing it close to the vest, kind of not showing that they're too concerned with it yet, but I have to say they are concerned going forward to this guy that had the knee issue that limited him early in the season. So I think White is going to be the man. He's an RB1. He was already borderline RB1, but now clearly. So, I mean, I think they'll still get Kendrion Barner involved. He had 10 carries for 36 here, but White is just the steal of the year. I think he's one of those guys that's going to win a lot of championships for people this year because you expected receiving back in the right matchups. Game flow is going to come through. The Patriots backfield hard to trust. Well, everything keeps aligning for James White, and you got to like that. And right now, I think Gordon locked in as an every week start here as well. Edelman, yes, as well in PPR, especially Hogan. We'll have to wait and see again to see if Gronk plays, but in standard, I would say Hogan, no. In PPR, definitely Hogan has a little bit more appeal. The Patriots special teams scored twice in this one, so a little bit of random there. But Tom Brady looking good as usual, 277 and 3. He's fine, locked in with Gordon. We love to see that for sure. Our next game that we'll look at is the Jaguars and Texans. And then with this one, you look at the box score, 20-7 here for the Texans. Now, I watched a lot of this game. Well, I watch every game pretty much while they're happening. You look at this game and you look at Deshaun Watson, struggled a bit. They went, turned to the running game here, which was helpful for Lamar Miller owners, 22 for 100 yards on the ground with a TD, and they also added one catch for -1, so kind of a negated PPR there, but you like to see Lamar Miller, dedication to his running game. They kind of had to go there because Kiki Kuti aggravated the hamstring while he was there. Will Fuller was pretty decent, 6 for 68. And DeAndre Hopkins was a little bit bottled up, but still came up with a 31-yard grab, scored a touchdown, 3 for 50. That's what DeAndre Hopkins does. He finds a way to get it done in some form. So Watson, we didn't think this was going to be good. We didn't think it was going to be this way where 139 yards and a TD, and he just couldn't get going running. So, again, Watson, really hard to trust. This is the way the Texans need to win, run the ball traditionally and play some defense, especially when you're receiving corps without Ryan Griffin, without Kiki Kuti, don't really have the rookie tight ends get involved yet. You can't just throw to two guys and expect to produce here. So that's going to hurt Watson going forward. And the Texans being this dominant defensively also hurts Watson because he's not going to be chucking 300 yards and trying to make something happen as well. So I think he's a guy that if you have a better option week in and week out that you can look at for sure. Now the Jaguars, what a disaster. Blake Bortles had to be benched here. He lost 2 fumbles. It was terrible. 61 yards passing, 30 rushing before he exited the game for Cody Kessler, who actually came in wasn't too bad, 156 yards and a TD, but took 4 sacks, had a pick here. So it was pretty ugly overall. Incredibly hard to trust anyone in this receiving corps right now. Monte Moncrief happened to be the guy randomly, 7 for 76 on 10 targets, but Keelan Cole, that train, that ship, or whatever, is left the station or sailed or whatever. 2 for 21 and 7 targets. That's not happening here with Bortles. 4 for 17 for Dede Westbrook. Not happening there either. We thought that could be good in the slot. To Moncrief looked okay, but still, you can't trust any of these receivers week in and week out. TJ Yeldon, we told you about the Carlos Hyde trade. We'll have to see what TJ Yeldon's role is going forward. He still is a gamer, had a great touchdown catch in this one, 5 for 40 in TD. We know Carlos Hyde doesn't catch passes, so I think Yeldon is still going to be involved here, folks, in the short term. We'll have to see how the Hyde-Fournette thing, but I don't think Yeldon's role is going to change too much. He's going to be involved in the pass game. They need a spark there in the backfield, especially with the pass protection being a little bit shaky. Dump offs there to Yeldon, and the Eagles game looks like a good spot for game flow and receiving there for Yeldon. Hyde, from his days with Duke Johnson Jr. and last year with Matt Breida, he's not going to do much pass catching there at all. So that helps Yeldon, and Fournette's not going to be maybe forced into too many touches when he gets back. So Yeldon, I think, is going to have some standalone value more than you think now, because he's just such a key part of this offense and does all the little things right as a change of pace back, that maybe he's been overextended in a role that he doesn't need to be in. Now, let's go to our final 1 o'clock Eastern time game there from Sunday. 37-17, the Vikings beat the Jets. Now, Latavius Murray, second straight week that he's killing it. So if you had him behind Dalvin Cook, you've finally seen the results the past 2 weeks. 15 for 69 and 2 TDs for Latavius Murray. Looked really good. Had a 38-yard run here against the Jets. So very good dash to the end zone there for Murray. So Dalvin Cook, hopefully handcuffed. If not, you just took Murray as a speculative pick. You're very happy with the results. They're not really involving too many other guys in this mix, and even had 2 catches for 14 yards. So he's pretty much become what they wanted out of Dalvin Cook. They just are so frustrated with Cook and the hamstring that they're just trying to find other guys to produce. And Murray is now looking like an RB1 in the way that Cook would have been used here. So I don't think you can put Murray in a part-time role when Cook comes back the way he's producing as well. So keep that in mind. You look at the passing game, Stephon Diggs, I don't know, 14 targets, catches 8 for 33 yards. And to make matters worse, he was rushing twice for minus 7. So even the 33 yards he got, he lost some of that. I don't get it. I get it in one sense that he's being double-teamed. But there was not exactly Morris Claiborne shadowing here. He had a lot of young corners with no Buster Screen or Tremaine Johnson in this game. So very disappointing. Adam Thielen, he just works the slot. We were talking about this with Tom Kesnick last week, that he just is uncoverable in that spot because he's big and catches everything over these guys. 9 for 110 on 10 targets and another TD. He's just a machine now. While Diggs, you just want something to trickle down to Diggs. You want someone to put the better cover man on Diggs, but Thielen is just a monster at this point. So at some point, maybe against the Saints coming up this week, which is a potential for a high-scoring game, Diggs, a guy that is more built to beat the Saints over the top with his speed. We know that from the Minneapolis Miracle. Maybe things can get better there in that spot. And I think at some point you're going to have to double-team Thielen, take him out, knowing that Kirk Cousins likes him. 241-2 for Kirk Cousins. So solid game, not spectacular. Expected a little bit more, but anytime you get that close to that 250-2, you'll take it in fantasy with an every week starter, and that's what you saw. And the thing about the Diggs, there's some question about, can they get the ball downfield with protection? Well, their offensive line has played better, and there were bombs to Thielen and Aldrick Robinson in this game, who had also had a 34-yard TD. So I don't think that's an excuse. Diggs just is not looking like he's separating and doing the things he needs to do to be the big-time playmaker he is after getting the big contract. So hopefully hold, be patient. The big weeks are coming. He just has a very frustrating floor and a very high ceiling, and that comes with the territory. With the Jets side of things, look at the Sam Darnold there. 1 TD, 3 interceptions. Jermaine Kearse, I don't get it. Had 2 targets, didn't come up with anything. Well, this is what happens when you have a rookie quarterback who's throwing to 12 guys in the game, and the three of them were blanked in this one. So Darnold spreading the ball way too much for our taste. That hurts in fantasy when Trenton Cannon, 4 for 69, is your leading receiver, and then Chris Herndon is the guy who gets the touchdown at tight end. Very frustrating, hard to trust anything in the Jets passing game. And now Isaiah Crowell didn't look good playing with that foot injury, 11 for 29. But then Bilal Powell got hurt with a scary neck injury, so Crowell could have a little bit more value going forward if Powell has to miss time. They'll work in Trenton Cannon a little bit more as a guy to watch as a change of pace back there behind Crowell if Powell has to miss time, especially with Elijah McGuire out. Cannon is the guy there next that you have to look at in to maybe fill that Powell role, because in PPR he would have had a solid game for you in this one with the 4 for 69. So if you're looking for a Powell replacement, short or long term, that's where I would go with there. Well, keep in mind that here on the Locked On Network, I love being a part of it, that we've got your team-by-team shows there, breaking down the beat reports a week after week. And then we've got Locked On College Sports as well. So whether your favorite team lies in the pros or you have another one that you love in college, especially in the crucial time for football season, you got to check out those shows on the Locked On Network. Here, and don't forget, NBA still crushing it in the regular season. And we've got MLB heading into the offseason with the World Series here. So all kinds of great stuff to listen to on the network. Be sure you do that. When we get back here, we will look at the late games to close the show for Roundup Monday in Week 7. Now let's continue and close the show with a look at the late games. And it was the Saints and Ravens played a wild one, 24-23. The Ravens failed to send this game in overtime because, breaking news, Justin Tucker missed an extra point attempt. So never seen it in our lives, but it happened. Everything happens at least once in our lifetime. That happened here for Justin Tucker. So very frustrating way for the Ravens to lose in reality. But in fantasy, Joe Flacco, you were pleased if you put him in there. It was slow, didn't look good early, but ends up with the two TDs there. Lamar Jackson got the other TD on the ground. So if you're an Alex Collins owner looking for that, kind of faked him and didn't look good there. Alex Collins, they didn't give the ball enough to. 14 times, they're for 48 yards, in my opinion. Buck Allen has kind of like faded away from this definite usage here. So Collins is still the guy, just a grind every week. You want him to break out and have that 20 carry performance where he can get 100 yards. That's not happening. He's very touchdown dependent this moment. Well, people were all over Willie Snead in here. He only had 4 touches for 36 yards, so that didn't work out very well. Michael Crabtree, solid in PPR, but I didn't expect him to do a big, big game here. 5 for 66. John Brown is still the man here. Proved it. Caught all 7 of targets, including a 56-yarder, 7 for 134, and a TD there in the red zone. So John Brown, clearly the number one option here. And people have been trying to sell Snead and Crabtree as the more floor guys, but John Brown even has the better floor here at this point. So that's what we take away from the Ravens overall. On the Saints side of things, Drew Brees, this shows you, even in a tough spot, Drew Brees can come through 2-12-2. A hard guy to bench in any situation because he's got a good floor there. Alvin Kamara back on track, 17 carries, 64 yards. It's not explosive, but against the Ravens' tough defense, you'll take it there. When you added up 75 yards from scrimmage on 19 touches and a score, you'll take that from Kamara. He's not going to dominate like he did early, especially with Mark Ingram in the mix. Mark Ingram, a bit disappointing. This matchup, 14 touches for 42 yards, that's for sure. Didn't get the chance to score. That can sometimes hurt his value in a close game like this one. Traquan Smith, with the news that Ted Ginn Jr. was going on IR with the knee, 3 for 44, not bad. I think it'll be some better days, but definitely clear big play threat. Michael Thomas also back on track, 7 for 69 and a TD. So Saints are pretty good baseline team here in fantasy. And you're not always going to have them go off on things in games like this, but you saw here that they can produce. Their main guys can come through for you. And sometimes it's good to be simplistic with the usage of players, and that's what the Saints kind of give you in fantasy football, a little bit predictability and stability in a game that really doesn't have much. Our next game is the Redskins and the Cowboys. The Redskins hold off for 20-17. Nothing much to see there. Adrian Peterson did have 99 yards rushing and 8 receiving here on one catch. So he's viable, especially when Chris Thompson misses second and straight game with a rib and knee injury here. So we'll have to see if Thompson can return, but they kind of went just to Capri Bibbs in that role. He caught a touchdown, 4 for 43 on 5 targets. So Bibbs kind of was used as a change of pace for Peterson, replacing Thompson, and here it worked pretty effectively, that is for sure. So Peterson, solid. What can you say? 4 games that he's been over 96 rushing yards for this team. Would like the touchdown, and you should come over Bibbs, but that's where you go. Alex Smith in this passing game, just stay away. Stay away. I mean, they had to put Michael Floyd and Maurice Harris and Josh Doctson in there because there's no Jamison Crowder or Paul Richardson. Yeah, this is pretty much a limited option team to the running backs. And Jordan Reed, what can we say about Jordan Reed? 2 for 43 on 4 targets there. So still not getting it done here for fantasy. And passing game just cut bait on the Redskins. On the Cowboys side of things, Dak Prescott just proved to be viable again. 273 and a TD. He was sacked 4 times, lost 2 fumbles, but he also had 33 rushing yards and a score there. So overall, very solid game for fantasy for Prescott. He's back in the mix here, doing his thing with the running and passing, where we have to look at him here. Michael Gallup, that connection is really revving up here. Long touchdown we saw early in the preseason that kind of mirrored this play. They took a deep shot, he scored, 3 for 81 and a touchdown on only 5 targets for Gallup. So Gallup's starting to get it here and connect with Prescott. Alan Hearns, not terrible either, 5 for 74 on 6 targets. And Cole Beasley, good PPR day after his monster standard day against the Jaguars, 7 for 56 on 8 targets. So these 3 guys can actually get it done. We'll see if they add Amari Cooper or someone else, Devontae Parker, someone in the mix with the trade deadline coming up next week. But for now, I kind of like Gallup going forward because he's clearly the number one here. Took him a while to learn and be that guy for Prescott, but it's happening here. Jeff Swaim, knee injury that looked very ugly, so we're not sure going forward. Probably going to miss some time. Blake Jarwin isn't the great replacement either because Dalton Schultz, the rookie, played well. So hopefully this will be a simplified passing game going forward, where it's Gallup, Hearns, and Beasley overall. And Elliott, yeah, they tried to get the ball to him. 6 targets, but only caught 2 for 9 yards. Couldn't catch a touchdown that was there for him late in the game that would have really helped the Cowboys win this one. But frustrating for sure, because he only had 15 carries for 33 yards. He has just not been good on the road. This entire rushing offense has just not been the same on the road. When you have Elliott matching Prescott there with rushing yards, it's usually not a good sign, and that's what happened. So Elliott, it's so hard from week to week. You want to expect him to be smashing a little bit more, and we've seen that. He can still get the job done, but I think Elliott's just a bad game. Chalk it up to that. Move on, and expect Elliott to rebound here in their next game easily for sure and be back on track. Our next late game and our last 4 o'clock game was the Rams all over the 49ers, 39-10. Now, with this one, you look at Jared Goff, 202 yards, 2 TDs, not a high game there, but solid. You'll take it. The 202, again, with some things having volatility, sometimes you'll take that. Here, Todd Gurley, another 3 touchdowns, 19 their touches, not as many yards as last week, but 86 yards and 3 scores. So 3 score machine, Todd Gurley. I mean, it's amazing how much he gives your team week in and week out, how much of a solid weekly cash game plays at any price. And I don't know how this is going to slow down anytime soon, really, for Gurley. He's just going to get his no matter what, kind of like Marshall Faulk back in the day with this Rams team. Brandon Cooks, we thought, could be revved up here with no Cooper Kupp. He had 5 touches for 71 yards and a TD. Robert Woods was solid, not as spectacular as we were hoping with Kupp out as well. He had a solid 6 touches there for 84 yards, but we expected a lot more. But when Gurley is doing stuff and scoring and finishing drives and dominating, sometimes you can't always expect Woods and Cooks to be involved, even when Kupp is out of the mix. So what we did see is that Josh Reynolds, Mike Williams, Gerald Everett, Tyler Higbee, they weren't getting any of these guys involved. It's pretty much a two-man passing game on top of Gurley in here with Cooks and Woods, so that's good for Cooks and Woods' floor going forward on this team, and obviously helps their ceiling as well. So interesting that Malcolm Brown actually outrushed Gurley. Part of it was they were up big and they just put him in there. But still, I would say right now Malcolm Brown is the handcuff you're looking at, but John Kelly's certainly going to be activated and get touches there if Gurley is down. So keep that in mind. Don't be too fooled if you're playing insurance quite yet with the Los Angeles Rams. With the 49ers on the other side of things, well, C.J. Beathard looked pretty bad here. 170 of the TD, two interceptions. George Kittle at least got the job done. His buddy from Iowa, 5 for 98 in TD. He's really the only guy on this 49ers team that you can trust week in and week out there to produce. Marquise Goodwin, we like the matchup, only 2 for 24 and 5 targets there. 2 for 18 for Kyle Juszczyk. Pierre Garçon and Trent Taylor, they hardly dented the box score here. So George Kittle, the baseline, the guy that you're looking to play every week from this 49ers offense. But everyone else, Goodwin, this mix, just week to week. And if they get killed up front like they did here with Aaron Donald, 4 sacks, he dominated the game. There's going to be no time to get the ball downfield there to take advantage of Goodwin. So it's going to be a lot of dump off short passes. That's how they want to do this anyway with Beathard, and that really favors Kittle. And Raheem Mostert is somebody we're going to look more and more going forward. 4 catches for 19, added 7 carries for 59 yards as well. Matt Breida down again with an ankle injury. Could only play 5 plays here, 15 yards there before he had to depart here. So I don't know. They might have shut down Matt Breida. This ankle, they've really tried hard to keep this kid in the lineup, but I just don't see it. If he gets hurt and he's so key to your offense, if this season's lost anyway, I don't know why they wouldn't shut down Breida and try to keep him healthier for next year when they have Jimmy Garoppolo back and some of their defensive guys get healthy as well. Have Jerick McKinnon in the mix and can mix him in with Breida. So we'll have to see how it goes. But Mostert is the guy that I want ahead of Alfred Morris for sure. So last week they said, we're not sure if he's the guy over Morris, but he clearly is. He's more explosive here, can do a lot of things that Breida can do in the passing game. So last call for Mostert, whoever and however you want to call him, he's a guy that you have to be picking up in leagues here going forward because he's going to get a lot of touches in a dink and dunk passing game and a running game that's still going to have a pretty good baseline. They had 107 yards rushing this game, so keep that in mind. Even a game where they were outscored pretty easily, the game flow hurt, they still gave some chances to run, and that's what happened here. Our final game that we'll talk about is the Bengals and Chiefs, and it was all Chiefs. This is almost like the Rams 49ers game where Andy Dalton played the role of C.J. Beathard, 45-10. Patrick Mahomes, we're just running out of things to say about this dude. Okay, he threw an interception. How dare he? But 358 yards, 4 TDs, 45 yards rushing as well as bonus here. And Kareem Hunt is just balling out with him. I mean, the danger of this passing game has just made it awesome for Hunt. He's just destroying here. Hunt had 3 TDs there, 20 touches, 86 rushing, 55 receiving. He's just a dominant force here. And what you're seeing here is the Tyreek Hill can have a bad game, but still had 7 for 68 and a TD on 10 targets. Sammy Watkins, 4 for 74 on 7 targets. Travis Kelce didn't score, but 5 catches for 95. You'll take that from your tight end all the time without a TD. So everyone getting it done here for the Chiefs. Even Spencer Ware coming off the bench was able to get 89 yards. Keep in mind, Ware has to be owned if you're a Hunt owner. He's a great, great handcuff because he's going to pick up where he left off, do a lot of damage in the passing game as well. Should Hunt have to miss time, so something you need to think about for the stretch run, protect your investment in Kareem Hunt with Spencer Ware. Now, on the other side of things here with the Bengals, as we look at our final team here on Thursday, Sunday games, Andy Dalton, primetime Andy Dalton, was really terrible. 148 yards, 1 TD, 1 pick 6 that he threw here. Just not very good. They got behind so far. At least A.J. Green had 7 for 117 before this game got really out of hand. But Tyler Boyd was shut down here, 3 for 27 on 4 targets. They had CJ Uzuma got in the end zone, so you got something out of him if you played him, 2 for 13 on caught both of his targets, but ugly, ugly game. And then Joe Mixon, what can you say? They tried to get him involved. He looked okay early, 13 carries for 50 yards, added 3 catches for 1 yard somehow. Just got out of hand. Game flow took Mixon out of the game. Just totally ugly, ugly game for the entire Bengals offense. And I think they'll rebound nicely against the Buccaneers next week. But it was tough to witness this when you thought, hey, the Chiefs defense, primetime at home, they were pumped up, got after Dalton, forced turnovers, and made a big impact here for sure. So, gotta love the Chiefs D primetime bump there that you always have to look at. And that's something you have to keep in mind. A bad defense is going to overachieve at home in primetime most of the time, and a sneaky tip there in fantasy football. So there you have it. There are all the looks at what went on here in fantasy football Thursday and Sunday games in Week 7 NFL action. We'll come back tomorrow with weekly waiver wire with Eric Edholm to start looking at the players you need to think about picking up. We talked a little bit about those, but guys specifically that you should target with your fab budget and waiver claims this week, and no matter what format you're on. And we'll also look at what we saw, finish the takeaways with the Falcons and Giants. So thank you so much for being a loyal listener. If you're a new listener, welcome, and we love having you here, part of Locked On NFL Network. And we'll have a lot more as we flip the script here to Week 8 going forward, but hopefully that gives you a lot of insight there, and that's what we do. No nonsense, get to the point, and look at everything deep here from what happened on Sunday. For Locked On Fantasy Football, this has been Vinny Iyer. We'll see you tomorrow.